we go with the John Curley, Sherry Elliker show. You coming along for the ride. Teeny's still getting her psychic reading. A lot to learn in there. So Joe's in charge of letters that are coming in. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. Although Andrew says don't bother. You can also text the Muckleshoot Resort text line. It seems where everybody gets a chance to vent their spleen at 1-888-973-5476. Oh, welcome. Come on in. And, of course, the Instagram going fast and furious. Joe puts stuff up all the time. Kooky stuff there at the John and Sherry show. Sherry spelled S-H-A-R-I.
Oh, that's
the keys. Yes, it is. Oof, God. Somebody light a match. Is that a thing that we just used to do in the 70s and 80s, light a match when the dog used to break wind? Was that just a thing people don't do anymore?
I think it's a remedy. I don't think that's gone out of style.
Okay, good. Keep that around for a while.
Okay.
Let's do this. Let's take care of a couple of local news. So this is a story. It's a Whidbey Island, and it is known as a wind phone, where you can talk to people who have passed. Passed away, Andrew, not passed gas. Hang on. The wind phone. Is there sound on the wind phone? Where is the wind phone? Joe? There it is. Whidbey Island wind phone. Thank you. Okay. Oh, good. Eric Wilkinson over there, King 5, tells
us. Off a gravel trail. Inside Whidbey Island's Trustland Trails Park sits a phone booth where words ride on the wind.
Hi, Grandma. It's me. Just wanted to give you an update on life.
A sort of airway to heaven.
But I feel so blessed that there is a wind phone now on the island.
Liz Owen Williams uses what's called a wind phone to speak with her grandmother.
Last time you saw her, she was only 4.
Grandma Eileen died in 2013 at 98 years old.
We miss you immensely every day.
The old rotary telephone Liz uses isn't connected to any transmission lines, but Liz believes it's connected to something greater.
Majority of my conversations are quiet or they're through prayers. Picking up a phone is a different type of conversation that you're able to have.
It makes it more tangible.
It is. It's definitely tangible.
This particular wind phone is a creation of Susie Reynolds. Rooted in Japanese culture, it's a place where anyone can come, lift the receiver, and have a personal conversation with someone who's passed on. Lee Bunch Kushnerite is still mourning the loss of her husband, Joshua, who passed 5 years ago.
Thank you for taking care of the kids and I, even after you were gone.
Joshua died by suicide, leaving Lee and their children on their own. She's brought the kids to the booth so they can tell their late dad a lifetime of words otherwise left unsaid. Call it prayer, meditation, or simply therapy, Lee says, it works.
I can't think of any healthier way for grieving. We left with smiles on our faces. We did cry, but they were happy tears.
Wind phone. Would be
honest. Yeah, this is something they do in Japan. I think we talked about this at one point. And people find it very healing to be able to have a phone there that they believe is connected to some other source and really talk to their loved ones. Maybe there were things that were left unsaid before they died, and this is an opportunity for them to be able to let them know their feelings.
Yeah. I hesitate to tell the story because I don't want to be yelled at by the angry man that it says always yell something
like, "Move on."
Too late.
This is why it's always tough because we get the consultants come in. Oh no, you could tell a story 50 times in one day, but the problem is people listen to our show for a long time. They're like, "Oh, that old story, that thing. He's telling that one again." So this is for the rare people that hadn't heard this one before. So don't. Old angry man, don't yell at me. Real fast. Ready? You know what I told you before, Sherry.
Okay.
So I'm in Sonoma. My father's passing. My brother calls, said, don't send the kids. Don't send Lace. Forget about it. He's going to be gone. By the time they get there, he's gone. I said, well, keep me updated, you know, along the afternoon into the evening. Just let me know what's happening in the room. I know my dad's going to die because he basically figured out that, you know, if I don't drink water for 4 days, I'll be dead. So he had kind of planned it all out. All right. So I'm in Sonoma. I'm sitting there and I'm telling Nick, I said, you know, My age is pretty good. I've only lost three people I really care about. Lisa Norrie, my Aunt Mary, and now my father. So that's pretty good to be this old in life, to be around long enough to only have really three people I care about that have passed. And then, I've told the story before, heart, my hand to God, on my phone, scrolling, which I've never seen before, scrolling across the top of the phone, it says, call Kevin Straley. Again, scrolls again, call Kevin Straley. Scrolls across, call Kevin Straley. I'm looking at it. It must look like it's seen a ghost. I turn, I show Nick. So what's that say? She says, call Kevin Straley. I said, look where it's scrolling over the top. It's at the top of the phone. Call Kevin Straley. It scrolls two more times. She says, who's Kevin Straley? I said, he's a, wow. Golly, he's a buddy of mine that we traveled all around the world with. I shot Evening Magazine stories with him. We covered the Olympics, and he died in a motorcycle accident on I-90 a number of years ago. And it scrolled across again. Call Kevin Straley. She's like, what? Isn't that weird? I just looked at the phone, and just all of a sudden I had this sort of peace, like, well, maybe... I don't know, maybe they can hear you. Maybe mm-hmm. the energy leaves the body, but is still out there somewhere. And Straley, I guess, felt like, hey, what about me? So Lisa Norrie, your Aunt Mary, your dad, what about me? You miss me? You knew me? I guess that's what the reason it came across the top of the phone. It was the oddest moment. But again, very comforting, because then you think, okay, well, you know, the energy is neither created nor destroyed. The energy in your body leaves your body. It's no longer able to function within the workings of your body and goes somewhere else. And then apparently you can connect with it somehow. And I'll never forget that. September 16th. It was like 6 years ago now. Weird. Very, very weird. Life-changing and affirming to, like, well, you never know. So I called his ex-wife afterwards, Sheila, and I said, you're not going to believe what happened. She goes, that sounds like Kevin. So,
Do you think it could possibly be that he was letting you know that he was there to greet your dad?
Knowing Straley. No, I think it was a way of saying, hey, screw you. What about me? Mm-hmm. You know, what about me? Why not include me in there? We had a cantankerous relationship. We really liked one another, and then we hated one another. We got into a fist fight in a really fancy, hotel where John Lennon and Yoko decided they would do like a love-in or a naked-in. They were in the bed the whole time. Mm-hmm. Remember that hotel there? I think it was Sweden or Switzerland. Yeah, Amsterdam. And Sterling and I got into a really big fight, and I stood up and threw a glass of, it was a white tablecloth, really nice place. I threw a glass of water in his face, and I still had the cup in my hand, and I had it kind of up in my face, and he went to punch me, and he punched the glass, which then broke into my hand. And Maitre D's like, gentlemen, I think it's time for you to leave. So I, whoops, can't do it in those fancy, you can't be punching people and breaking glass into people's hands there in those fancy restaurants. Doesn't say that on the menu, though.
Yeah. What was the fight about?
I was giving him a hard time about overtime.
Oh,
I said
yours
to him, or his? How long does it take you to pack? Man, I need like an hour. I said, could you pack in 15 minutes? Man, I could pack in 10 minutes. I said, okay, so it's not about the time. You don't need the time. You just want the overtime. Man. I said, so you're ripping them off. You're ripping off staying. Man, come on, man. I'm going to get you. And I was like, psh, water in the face.
Anyway, going to get you. Like,
man, curly. Yeah. So, maybe it was a way of saying, listen, your dad's going to be gone, but you can still talk to him, which I'm okay with all that. I just don't need to know that the people that I love also can kind of see you at other times.
Yeah, like, that
certain
freaks
times
me
I don't want
too.
Them kind of looking at me, you know, like I'm in the bathroom or bedroom. Like, no need to be watching here. Just, you know, go over, get yourself a harp, go work on your harp skills or something right, up there in heaven.
Go back to the light. I worry about that too. Like, how much are they watching? Because they say, you know, people are around us, spirits are around us, their energy is around us. And I also read, I think, someplace that they say they're not concerned about mundane things like bodily functions, that type of stuff. So not to worry about.
How about if you're more than, how about if you're a little not mundane?
Well, why don't you be more specific, Angel?
Yeah, it's like that. Get the dogs out of the room. Same thing. Why are the dogs watching us? Yeah, so you haven't had that experience yet. But I'll tell you, if I go before you, which I probably will, Sherry, keep that kidney in there, and I fill out my little death chart and stuff, I will come back and hang out and, you know, watch you put on makeup and things, and I'll be there for you. Okay?
It takes me 30 minutes every day, even after all this plastic surgery. So you'll be there.
I'll be down there. This is right after Donald Trump got elected. 5% of Americans thought that the media was fair to him. Everybody thought that they weren't. People still think that. And the media journalists said, we have to cover him differently. The New York Times came out with this great big piece about, we just can't cover him like we cover other politicians. It's important for us to be constantly checking him and not giving him airtime. And then, of course, remember when he wins, I think, in Iowa, Rachel Maddow says, we're not going to cover. Not going to cover his acceptance speech because, you know, we're just not going to do that. Basically just censoring him. He just won in Iowa. He's the presidential, you know, he could possibly be the, nope, we're not going to cover it. Not going to cover it. Everybody knows how the media hates him. Just the elite folk, especially, you don't get more elite than NPR. So this is interesting. So Barry Weiss on Free Press had a chance to talk to a NPR. There's this guy's been in there for a long time, a journalist.
Yeah, 25 years.
25 years. So he basically explained the reaction just before Trump won, when Trump won, and then how the media decided they were going to pivot and then cover him.
You write, for the majority of your time at NPR, despite the liberal bend, an open-minded, curious culture prevailed. We were nerdy, but not knee-jerk activists or scolding. Ori, when did that start to change? When did the thing that everyone sort of recognized as sort of a liberal bias start to shift into something harder than that, into what you call a knee-jerk activist and even scolding quality?
Well, I think it was cumulative. I don't think it was one event. I mean, I think part of it was Trump's election. You know, I think like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. We assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she didn't, and it was really an unsettling experience. But I also think, to me, it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch. But I think also we kind of locked down after a while. I think after a while we started covering Trump in a way that like a lot of legacy news organizations, that we were trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion, like a lot of news organizations, which was, as I write, sort of catnip, although it was just rumors and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents or evidence. It wasn't really solid, but I think it was compelling. And for us, you know, I think a lot of newspapers, you know, used documents or anonymous sources. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on constantly, a lot. I think I counted 25 times. You know, and in most of those conversations, he sort of alluded to evidence he may have had or sort of teased out, Russia, you know, he was colluding or the campaign was colluding with Russia. And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion. And, you know, I think we sort of learned the story kind of disappeared. But to me, that was like a time for like, what went wrong? Why did we miss this? Like, you know, despite our feelings about Trump, this is a story we should have sort of treated differently.
Yeah, they kind of got sucked in on that one. But, it was our job to destroy him. Really? That's the job? But if people really are just completely hoodwinked into this, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, this ideology that he is the direct threat to democracy and he's the Antichrist and must be stopped. And even if the American people think that they want him, they don't know. We need to make sure that we point out every single foible and every single crazy thing he said, because we need to protect the American people from their own instincts of, for populism. So at least that guy from NPR admits that they, you know, once after being shocked and then saddened, then they went on the tear to, you know, destroy him.
Yeah, the other thing that he said was back in 2020, after the incident with George Floyd, he said all levels were aligned on the whole thing about race identity. He said that they had to have that viewpoint of diversity. Everything changed to DEI. They had to have regular bias, you know, that bias training thing, and also monthly dialogues with women and men of color to ensure inclusion. And he said they really just went full bore on that.
Right. They took the one incident of George Floyd in Minneapolis, and then that became, you know, emblematic of every single interaction with every single black person and every single cop. And then as Joe Biden told George Floyd's child, your daddy changed the world. Yeah, he did. And not in a good way. All the additional laws and all the other stuff that followed after that, because, boy, they pushed it hard, hard. Taking that one incident and then blowing it up to be somehow representative of race relations or police and black motorists. And look at all the laws that have been passed, and then all the defund the police and the ridiculous stuff they did here in the United States, and then DEI, the millions and possibly billions of dollars being spent on that racist program of DEI. I saw somebody the other day say DEI stands for didn't earn it.
Okay.
You heard of meritocracy, right?
Of course, yes. I believe in that.
It's the opposite of meritocracy.
Okay, yes.
Here we go. Wilcox Family Farm eggs, Sherry. That's just some hard-boiled eggs, a little bit of salt on them. Just scramble them, or you know what? I think there's a scene in that Pretty Woman, Women, or whatever that Julia Roberts thing is, or Runaway Bride, or that the guy didn't know how she liked her eggs. It was like a very pivotal moment. And she used to change how she liked her eggs based upon what the guy thought. Poached, scrambled, you know, over easy. So apparently that's a big deal. Women like, so how do you like your eggs? Your Wilcox Family Farm eggs. Thank you. Good.
So don't get that wrong next time.
No, I'm a poached guy myself. So
good.
Wilcox Family Farm eggs. There we go. This is, kids have the craziest imagination, don't they? So this mom calls into a radio talk show, the psychiatrist that's on there, because her child has got a problem. And the parents, the stepmom has a problem too because of how the girl is going about living her life. Is that in here somewhere, Joe? I'm trying to find it. Eclipse for Carol.
It's from yesterday. Identifies as a fox. Should be right.
There it is, right top. Oh yeah, got it. Here we go. So here we go. Daughter, I think she's, 13 or something, identifying as a fox.
So I have been happily married for 11 years, and I have a stepdaughter who's 13. And then my husband and I have two younger kids together. My stepdaughter is a Therian. She identifies as a fox. She wears a mask and a tail and has a YouTube channel of her jumping around like a fox in really short shorts. And this is mostly being done at her mom's house. She's at our house every other weekend, and this last time she came over, she had made my daughter, who's 9, a mask and was teaching her how to jump and filming her with her cell phone and presumably to give her feedback on how to jump better.
Well, duh, Jill. Every young fox has to learn how to jump. How else do you think they're going to learn?
You know, maybe wherever you hear other radio shows, you just want to take a shower, don't you? Just think, is this what we sound like?
I know. I worry about that.
Okay, hang on. So is this guy a doctor?
He's called Doctor. I know. He's John DeLore. It's a radio show.
Okay. All right. So the sympathetic radio.
The fact that there's a name for this, I feel like we're in the twilight zone that you and I are having this conversation. But continue, Jill. Continue.
That's why I'm calling you, because I'm at a complete loss and I'm shocked. And it is a whole thing, and there's a name, and there's terminology, and there's things that are offensive to them, and anyway. Okay, so ever since this last visit, now my daughter is a Therian also. She identifies as a giraffe, if you're curious. The other thing is, my husband and I were looking...
Are they calling in for, like, psychological advice?
A Dr. John DeLore, and I don't know. You remember Dr. Laura wasn't a doctor, so right. That might be his radio name.
Okay, got it. Okay, a little bit of sympathy for
me. No, it's not funny. I'm laughing with you.
No, yes, we're laughing, and we need help.
And you're crying and drinking heavily. I get it. All of it.
Exactly.
I get it.
Okay, well, anyway. So now the other daughter... Her biological daughter is a giraffe. She's got a fox and a giraffe in the house. I would assume that it's a phase the kid is going through, and I don't know what advice. I think some of the people that have sort of weighed in on this said, you know, be involved in this screen time, take away their phone, or see what they're putting up on YouTube, why they're putting it up, who's looking at them, what type of things, close the YouTube thing down. And try to find some other creative outlet for this kid who's got an imagination, but also might just have a lot of weirdos looking at her jumping around dressed as a fox on YouTube.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he said. The other thing that he said was that when you sit down to talk to her, you need to take responsibility and apologize for not being more aware of boundaries and of keeping her safe. And he said the YouTube channel is probably watched by a bunch of guys of this young girl jumping around, and she needs to be aware of that. And as far as the giraffe sister goes, he said you can put boundaries down on that too. So you can be a giraffe in the yard, you can be a giraffe in your room, but you cannot be a giraffe when we go to a restaurant, go to church, go to a store, hang out with your friends. That's not allowed.
Yeah, and they also point out giraffe rule.
Yeah, there's a rise in Therians, and they talk about a woman from Seattle who identifies as a wolf.
Oh, yeah. She was interviewed by Matt Walsh in the documentary, the movie, What is a Woman? And he asked that person who's a wolf to do some, like, wolf calls and stuff, and mm-hmm. the person didn't want to. But, yeah, identifies as a wolf. And I saw this other guy on Instagram where you can really waste hours of your life. He is turning himself into a giant serpent. He's removing all of his parts. And he's having he had his nose removed. The bridge of his nose was completely flattened. And he's had all these like tattoo scales all over his face because he wants to be a giant snake. And that's the way he wants to live, as a snake. And he had his teeth removed and had like fangs installed or something like that.
Now, what medical professional would go along with this and say, I'm going to remove your teeth so you can be a snake? I'm gonna flatten the bridge of your nose so you're more snake-like.
Well, that's what you want to do, and the person's willing to do it. Listen, can you remove the bridge of my nose? I want to look like it. I want to have a face like a snake. The guy's like, all right. That's what you want. Here you go. I'm going to cut off all your parts so you are like a snake.
Huh.
If that's what the person wants, and they're consenting adult, and they've want to look like a snake, and the doctor says, okay, I'll make you look like a snake. I mean, I don't know how big of a market that is.
snake surgery.
The spokesperson for that. Yeah.
You can slither on in there.
You unhook your jaw and just eat a rabbit.
Yeah.
One other one, if you want to look like a cicada, apparently they're all coming. We know that they're coming back, but apparently for the first time now, we already did the story, Joe. 200 years, there's two different types of cicadas are coming.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, even bigger. So there's, yeah, the brood XXI, known as the Great Southern Brood. And then, 13, brood 13, the Northern Illinois brood.
We expect to see a lot of cicadas. We expect to hear a lot of cicadas.
The significance of this, I believe, is because you've got this 13-year brood and a 17-year brood that have somewhat overlapping ranges, and they're coming out together at the same time in the same year. You know, the last time that happened was over 200 years ago.
Cicadas are nice in kind of thinking about, you know, people that are afraid of insects in the sense, like, they're big, they're showy, they kind of have weird colors to them, but they really don't do anything to kind of harm humans. I mean, they might be an annoyance, but, you know, people don't have to be afraid in terms of, like, getting bitten or something like that.
Kind of the general rule of thumb that entomologists use, people like me that study insects, is that once the topsoil in an area reaches around 64 degrees Fahrenheit, especially if there is rain or some moisture to help them out, that is when we expect them to start emerging.
When they do come out, they are so numerous, so abundant, it is overwhelming. The predators and everything eats them when they come out, even people. They just can't eat anywhere near all the cicadas that are out there.
Sounds like a challenge to me. Go to all-you-can-eat cicada bar and just on them.
Yeah. Who is he saying can't eat around them? People or?
No. People eat them. That they come up from the ground. Imagine that. You've been in the ground for 13 years. You finally come out of the ground and somebody comes along and eats you. No, people eat them, and there's no way all the predators could possibly eat all other cicadas that are there.
That's a lot of cicadas.
There'll be trillions of them, they said.
Trillions?
Yep.
Where is this only in the Pacific Northwest, or is this other places?
I think it's mostly the Midwest.
Oh, the Midwest. Okay.
Sure. You're referring to the Northern Illinois brood, and then, of course, the Great Southern brood.
Well, of course. Yes. I should have known that. As the good doctor would say, duh.
Duh.
Duh. Duh.
Let me laugh at some of your pain.
Sure, it's Dr. Dan.
Oh, hi, Dr. Dan. You're back.
Well, I hadn't left. I've just been here waiting for the letters.
Oh, would you want to read some or?
No, he comes to the mailman now.
Oh, okay.
I'm the mailman, as you can see. I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman, if you didn't know, I'm the mailman, I bring the mail to your door.
Now that's a professional. I hit the wrong sound effect, but I was able to get into the Dr. Dan character right away. So sorry about that. Whoopsie. We'll get to letter of the day first, take care of all the rest. Here we go, Sherry.
Okay, off topic, Benny in the 253 says, post-haste. If that isn't John Curley speak, I don't know what is.
Well, thank you, Benny. I think I'll take that as a compliment. Tyler 425, John, Sherry, and other friends, thanks for cheering me up today. We had to take our newborn back to the hospital and check her into the NICU in Evergreen. It's been tough to leave her and my wife while going running errands, taking care of other kids, and taking things to my wife to stay with our daughter. Your show is always wonderful to listen to, and the laugh, I needed that today. Well, God bless you and your little one there at the NICU in Evergreen.
This is Everett from Belfair on John's friend who passed appearing on his phone. My mother-in-law passed recently. Her name has shown up on caller ID.
See about that. Helen and Roy, is John still taking that medication that makes him want to give money away? The answer is yes. Can you remind me when he takes it and give me a cell phone so I can give him a call and pitch him on buying me a new transmission? No joke.
All right. Rachel C. says, okay. Is this
206-960. Nope. I forgot my number. Keep going, Sherry.
Okay. Rachel C. says, is this show the result of yesterday's eclipse? Kind of feels like it.
Let me say something. There's so much just crappy news, right? It's the same. Joe and I, Sherry, we talk about news. It's like the same hummus and the shooting and the blah, blah, blah. Just like, it's just so sick of it. So, ran out of time. That's my good letters. Anyway, just try to lighten it up a little bit. You know, lighten it up, kids. Come on. Thank you, Teeny. Thank you. Here we go. Sherry?
All right, Paul in Sammamish is talking about the court-mandated make good from yesterday. Whatever became of Sherry's attempt to unite the people of our country? I believe the initiative was called Hand Across America. Also, a little-known fact about John Curley is that he was born during the June 30th, 1962 total eclipse. As a result, he suffers from male pattern baldness, the inability to pronounce the number four.
Look at Paul. That was letter of the day yesterday, but because TD didn't catch it,
slipped it in there the other day.
Sherry just skipped right on.
Oh, that's right. You missed it. You skipped ahead on it. So many great letters. That's on you, Sherry.
That's all.
All right. Should we go over to. Yeah. That's all she wrote for now. Let's do another hour.
Okay.
Can we be more? Can we be more off the rails?
We can try. We always try.
All right. Let's do that.